What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try. What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
The Therapy is a Christian podcast is all things mental health and Christ. We specifically talk about how mental health and God are merged together to foster growth, healing, and making mental health a normal conversation. I'm your host, Rosin Renee, and welcome to the show.
Hello and welcome. You are listening to the Therapy is a Christian podcast. I'm your host, Rosin Renee. Welcome to another episode of the show. Hey sis, I hope that you are doing well, and I hope that you have had a wonderful week. So welcome back to another episode of the show. This is part three of the attachment series. I hope that you have enjoyed part one and two. If you have not listened to part one and two, please go back and listen to part one. I go into great detail around kind of a little introduction into why I'm talking about attachment. And in part one, I talk a little bit about what secure attachment is, as well as what anxious attachment is. And then in part two, I talked a lot about avoidance and dismissive attachment, which is a little bit around what I felt and also grew up feeling like my attachment was with my parents. And so this week, I'm going to be talking about fearful avoidance attachment. And so just to give you a little brief introduction before going into this, I hope that these episodes have been informal. I know that it's a lot of information. It can be extremely overwhelming, I think, when you kind of hear things like this or episodes like this, because they offer a lot of insight and awareness. And like I told you all before, it's very hard to navigate through emotional trauma or just navigating through emotions when you kind of really can't pinpoint where it comes from. And so the practice of therapy is definitely to help you heal with trauma, but also really have a way to identify what some of the issues could be impacting you. And so my goal with all these podcasts is to just, you know, give light and relevance, but also help you to kind of see where some of these layers of trauma can come from. It can be extremely overwhelming and extremely hard to deal with. And again, I've learned so much in being a counselor that I said I would do another episode about that. But I really wanted to talk about attachment because I see this happen a lot with a lot of the people that I work with, especially Black women. I work with a lot of Black women, and I see this often with us. And so I wanted to just preface that. Additionally, why I wanted to talk about attachment, y'all know I'm always an attached faith to this, is that as a believer, I think oftentimes when we talk about building a personal relationship with God, anytime we talk about personal relationship with God, that can look very different for everyone. I don't think and don't believe that any relationship with God is the same for everybody, because there's oftentimes a lot of, you know, things to unpack when it relates to attachment and creating a relationship with God, because there can be sometimes trauma spiritually. There can be sometimes lack of trust because you don't really fully know or understand the character of God. But also there can be just kind of like this overwhelm of like, what does this even look like? Because God is not like us. And so our limited thought or limited viewpoint of God does not ever sometimes, like we can't ever understand the fullness of who he is. We get to experience great parts of our relationship with God. And so sometimes it can be really complicated when you are in hard seasons or you go through a bad relationship or experience death or experience trauma, no matter what age, that oftentimes these situations can impact you spiritually. And so one of the things I always have said and kind of have learned even more in doing therapy is that not only are we impacted personally, emotionally, and mentally by certain things, but we are also very much so impacted spiritually. And there can be a lot to unbox there. And so your attachment and your relationship with God matter. And so some of these things can help you have some language and understanding into why maybe you may react to God a certain way, or you may even, you know, lean on God in certain seasons or not lean on God in certain seasons. I think God's entire goal is to always lead us back to him. And I think one of those things is really helping us to understand self-awareness, which is ultimately my goal with helping share my story, as well as share other people's stories when I do interviews, and also share topics like this that you may have never heard of. So let's get into the podcast. So we're going to talk today about fearful avoidance attachment. As I've stated before, in the previous episodes, I talked about secure attachment, anxious attachment, avoidant attachment, and then fearful avoidant attachment. Fearful avoidant attachment is, you know, a little bit different from the other three in that it's a combination actually of avoidant attachment as well as anxious attachment. But the difference with this one is, whereas an anxious attachment where somebody completely has a fear of abandonment, they themselves respond they get very overwhelmed when it comes to anything related to addressing things, because it's very, they have a lot of self-doubt. They may feel very anxious, feel very sensitive. They feel like they lack emotional safety because they experience a lot of inconsistency with parents. And so they are unsure of what to do in a lot of situations, which creates a high level of anxiety. Whereas avoidant attachment is completely dismissive. They're very self-reliant. They're very avoidant, and they can also be very distant, meaning it doesn't bother them to not be attached to people. And so there's a deep sense of wanting to be attached to people, but because of the ability to not really address emotion or anything that requires emotion, avoidant attachment is very like, I'm good. Whereas fearful attachment is very different because it's a combination of the two. They are very, it's also kind of described as the unpredictable or disorganized attachment. So someone with this specific attachment style will often have a desire for close relationships, but at the same time fear trusting others and believe they'll get hurt if they get too close. So kind of like comparing the other ones, really with like dismissive attachment, where someone might just be like, I don't have to be close to you. A kind of fearful avoidance attachment is someone that wants to, but they fear so often that they're going to get too close or that somebody's going to hurt them. So it's a combination of clinginess and avoidance. And so there's this longing to be close, but they genuinely fear and believe they're going to get hurt. but they want the closeness, but it's oftentimes really hard. So they may talk themselves out of things, or they self-sabotage relationships, or very unpredictable in relationships. And they're also very isolated because there's this constant tug of war of like, can I trust them? Can I not trust them? What are they going to do? Are they not going to do this? And it's just very, very overwhelming. And so I'm going to give a quote that was from an article that I'll attach in the show notes for you all and kind of talk through it. So like avoidant attachment, they often cope with distancing themselves from a relationship, from relationship partners. But unlike dismissing individuals or avoidant individuals, they continue to experience anxiety and neediness concerning the partner's love, reliability, and trustworthiness. So whereas avoidance, and kind of the difference with this is there's a combination of you want to avoid the situation, but you still really long to be close to them. And even as I'm describing this, I know that this sounds extremely overwhelming and probably like hard to hear because it's very contradictory. But these are very much so things that people feel because of the level of attachment that might have happened either growing up or maybe experiencing some really big level of trauma, or not really having that consistency. So some common things that happen when a child or a person may feel very fearful of avoidant attachment is they don't really have a sense of safety. They always feel like something is wrong. This can be for someone who might have experienced consistent chronic trauma growing up, no matter if it was abuse or emotional abuse, or had a parent that was like very narcissistic, or feeling their physical safety was often a threat, meaning they may have been abused for long periods of time. And so there's this hypervigilance. And hypervigilance is basically like always being on guard. Like you're never feeling like if you go somewhere, you're going to feel fully safe or even know what an aspect of safety looks like. You cannot regulate your emotions. It's very hard for you to do so, meaning you can probably always feel anxious, always feel on edge, always feel like you are struggling with knowing what balance looks like and how to create it. You have a high degree of difficulty of trusting others. So it's very hard for you to even see people as trustworthy, even if they have never given you a reason to not trust them. And this can be very complicated in relationships because you always feel like even though this person has shown me good traits, they're going to hurt me somehow. And so there's this deep rooted fear that if I trust people, they're going to hurt me. Again, kind of talking about hypervigilance, always looking out for signs of danger, finding it hard to self-soothe. So meaning self-soothe is kind of a thing where I'll give a little basic example of it and then kind of talk about it for an adult. So I think about this with my son. One of the things that we did that I'm so thankful we did was sleep train him. And it started off with just us putting him in the crib at 3 months. Now, for people that are parents that co-slept or had babies that co-slept, my son did come back in the bed with us at times. But for the most part, I really tried to, throughout his first year, trained him to sleep in his bed. And one of the things the doctor told me was like, your son's gonna have to learn to self-soothe, which basically means comfort himself to a point of going back to sleep. And the way she described it was, you're an adult, you wake up throughout the night, imagine crying, waiting for somebody to come get you every time you woke up. And I was like, oh, I would never sleep. And she was like, exactly. So your son has to learn to actually self-soothe himself to go back to sleep. And so for a long period of time, when we were sleep training him, there were times where he would cry and I would have to, for a certain amount of minutes, just not go pick him up for him to eventually kind of calm himself down to go to sleep. Now it's to the point where I can put him down at 7 at night and he pretty much sleeps through the night. He may wake up here and there and kind of cry, but he pretty much goes back to sleep. And he has learned to kind of self-soothe himself or kind of essentially regulate his emotions to know like we're not gone, but also I'm okay, that nothing is wrong. But the hard part with someone who have experienced an attachment, I'm gonna give this example as an adult, I'm not saying that every adult who didn't sleep train as a baby doesn't know how to self-soothe, I'm basically kind of saying this an example of it. So, but what it looks like in a more practical way is, instead of you knowing how to calm yourself down, you may require a lot of things in order to regulate your emotions, meaning not feel overwhelmed. You may have to talk to people or have people around you, or you may have a hard time knowing how to do this. So this can be even for people who may go to alcohol or may go to marijuana or may go to recreational drugs to kind of try to soothe whatever emotion they have, or just outrightly avoid it. And so you have a hard time sometimes dealing with the emotion because it's hard to soothe it away. You might be very fidgety. You also may not have a sense of personal boundaries. So for someone who may be struggling with fearful attachment, you don't even know really what boundaries look like for you, because boundaries are, if I kind of put this boundary up, does this mean this person is going to leave me? And so there's this also can sometimes be this feeling of, I don't want to hurt the person's feeling, but I don't want them to continue to hurt me. So it's kind of like you don't really have an understanding of what healthy boundaries actually look like. You may also have a difficulty concentrating. I also give this and say this to clients a lot, because I have a lot of people that come to me that ask, like, do they struggle with ADHD, because they may struggle with focus. And I kind of always say you do need to be tested by somebody to see if you have ADHD. But a lot of times ADHD can really look like trauma. And we may think we have ADHD because it's a hard time. It's hard for us to focus. But in all actuality, you may just be having a trauma trigger where you may find it hard to concentrate. You may also find it hard to keep friends, which can be a really big thing. Because one thing that comes with having friendships is communication, dealing with conflict, trust, opening up and being vulnerable. Friendship is way more than just kind of going out with people, which to some degree you can have friends that you just go out with. But where is the value and the substance in deeper things, especially as you're an adult? You find that you need more than just that to kind of cope through the day or cope through life, because there are a lot of situations that occur that make it very hard to kind of navigate friendships when you don't have people you can share things and open up with. So you find it hard to keep friends because there requires some level of vulnerability, and with a lack of trust and feeling like, I don't know if I can trust, that back and forth feeling creates a lot of anxiety and can make it hard to keep friends. You also may disassociate to cut off feelings. So what that means is you completely kind of disengage altogether in order to deal with the feeling. You don't want to deal with the feelings you might feel. This isn't necessarily always happen in relationships, but this can happen if, like, this is the first thing that comes to mind, but like, you apply to a job, they never contact you. And so now you completely, instead of feeling and saying, I feel rejected because this job didn't reach back out to me, or just feel like kind of taking it for what it is, of like, okay, they didn't reach out to me, you completely like talk bad about that company, or just completely disengage altogether and kind of disassociating yourself with that thing completely in order to not deal with the negative emotion that you felt. I hope that makes sense. And then you may also try to regain control by being bossy. So this is a way for a lot of people, including myself, trying to learn what I've learned. Let me just kind of go on a tangent for a second. What I have learned about not being in control is that it's impossible for me to be in control. But there are tactics where I have tried to be in control, and it's very hard because I can't control people, and a lot of times I can't control situations. So it makes it very challenging to try to deal with a lot of things. And one of the things, especially in relationships, I've learned, and I really kind of learned this through being married to my very, very non, like, care what I try to say about being bossy towards him husband, because he's like, girl, I'm not gonna do what you tell me to do. And he's very supportive, and we have great communication. But at the same time, I would always say, like, I know best, so you need to listen to me, when all actuality I don't know best. But in order to regain control for me emotionally, my default reaction a lot of times was trying to boss him around. Like, you should do this and this would fix the issue. When in all reality, I'm just trying to be very in control because I don't feel emotionally safe in that situation. So a lot of times it's like, you know, kind of going through some of these things, we kind of wonder, you know, where does this even come from? Because sometimes this can continue into adulthood. If you might experience some things as a kid, and really that high level of anxiety and having a hard time to trust people can make it really hard to know what to do. And so this creates a lot of emotional dysregulation. In a way to like make this practical, when I say emotional regulation or dysregulation, and really what I'm trying to say is that you have a hard time calming down or regulating your feelings. Meaning, if you're feeling something, you have a hard time like getting through it. It's really hard for you to know how to respond or respond in a way that might be healthy. So you may just go off. You may cuss somebody out. You may shut down internally. You may cut them off. And that's not necessarily the healthiest way. It's just the way you're dealing with it to try to cope with maybe not feeling. Because a lot of times with us who might have experienced avoidance attachment or even a fearful avoidance attachment is you have no understanding of emotional identification. And this can even happen with anxious attachment. But like you really genuinely don't even know what you feel on a consistent basis. A lot of things I've heard from clients in talking about this is one of the most common things I hear is, well, I'll just let it go, or I want to let it go, or why can't I just let this go? When I really say, and I truly believe this, that letting it go is your way of just avoiding not feeling or sitting in the emotion. Because sitting in the emotion is really uncomfortable to say, I have been hurt and disappointed. And sometimes whoever has hurt or disappointed you may not even acknowledge you or acknowledge that they hurt you. And so sitting in that is very uncomfortable. And we often ask why, or even feel very bad about the fact that people won't recognize or acknowledge us. And so you have a hard time processing through then, what does it look like for somebody to acknowledge me and not acknowledge me? And so instead of that, you just kind of let it go. And that's not really dealing with it. I'm going to be honest with y'all. I could probably go into a whole spiel about quote unquote letting it go. And that's also not validating to you. When I hear people say, I just want to let it go, like, it's hard for me as a therapist to be like, but do you, like, is letting it go just a coping mechanism so that you can get through it? And some people, again, sometimes that may be the thing that they have to do to kind of just do it, because there are some things you just kind of have to let go. But when it comes to like deep rooted things and sometimes really feeling hurt, in order for you to let it go is to really feel the emotion, which is a lot of times what we don't want to do.
This episode of the God and Mental Health podcast is brought to you by Happy Mammoth. I am so excited to tell y'all about this brand because it has been so helpful to me. So I am not in my 20s anymore. And as I'm getting older, I'm really kind of understanding a little bit more about my hormones after having two kids. I'm really understanding like my mood shifts, my fatigue, sometimes my stress throughout the month, especially during those cycles of time before my period. So I recently started researching cycle seeking, and it was so helpful for me because I really kind of began to understand these different changes when I am feeling overwhelmed, when I am feeling tired, when I am feeling like my mood is different. I'm also just experiencing some of those kind of early PMS symptoms of like bloating and gassy and poor sleep and kind of racing thoughts and low mood. And so I started doing some research into cycle syncing and kind of came to understand that our different periods before our cycle change because of our hormones. And so I was thinking about a way to combat this, and Happy Mammoth is a brand that I think is going to be super helpful to some of my audience that might be experiencing some of these things. And so I think a lot of times we kind of associate our different moods with something's wrong with us, or that there is actually something that we're struggling with mental health wise, but not really understanding that as a woman, we naturally have up and down moods because of our hormones. And so for me, if you are someone that's maybe in your mid-20s and you're kind of seeing like during different periods of the month, you're more sad or you're more overwhelmed, this might be a good opportunity for you to maybe supplement and try to combat that with some of the amazing products at Happy Mammoth. So I want to talk to you all about particularly one specific product called Hormone Harmony. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now, here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors like chaotic hormone changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. And it means using only science-backed ingredients that have been proven to work for women. They make no compromise when it comes to quality, and it shows. If you're someone that definitely struggles with maybe bloating or maybe sleep or even racing thoughts or low moods, Hormone Harmony would be perfect for you. So for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order with Happy Mammoth. Just use the code THERAPY at checkout. That's happymammoth.com, HappyMammoth.com. And use the code THERAPY for 15% off today. Now, let's get back to the show.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
And so another thing that can happen with people, especially in adulthood, that have had this type of attachment is you have conflicting feelings about relationships. You're not sure how to feel about them. Friendships, dating relationships, but just any type of relationship, you don't even know how to feel about it. So you crave this, you want this, and even to some degree, you probably even want people to do the work for you, to reach out to you, to make plans with you, to do these things. But even in that, if they did, you still wouldn't trust them. Even if they've never given you a reason to not trust them, just the sheer fact of the way that you have probably been and grown up has made this be this way. You also may have a negative self-view of yourself. So you probably have really low self-esteem, you may be very passive aggressive. You may withdraw or isolate from social situations out of just really feeling like, and what I tell clients is just like a lack of worthiness, that you're worthy enough to be in these safe relationships and healthy relationships. And then you also may avoid getting close to other people. And so kind of along with this, this complete isolation, just avoiding getting to know people because there's this fear that I'm going to experience rejection. And so there's this constant state of self-sabotage, what I like to say, is where you kind of get in it, but then you talk yourself out of it because to some degree, it's like, if I try, it won't even matter. If I go for it, it's not even going to be a thing. And most of this has a lot to do with layers and layers and layers of disappointment that has not either been processed, addressed, or acknowledged by you or maybe even the person that hurt you. And so these type of things where you're struggling with this and you may be wondering, like, how did this even happen? Some of this has a lot to do with the way we grew up. But also there are a lot of things related to situational things like abuse, trauma. There might have been trauma with a caregiver. There may not have been trauma with a caregiver. And when I say trauma, there is even like if there's been brokenness in the relationships, like if there was distance for a period of time or a parent might have gone away for a while, you might have moved in with a grandparent. That breaks attachment. That time frame can do that. Broken trust. So if there was something that happened where you were just consistently and overwhelmingly always disappointed and your trust was broken, you may constantly feel as though you just don't trust people. And even if parents make promises to you and they just don't fulfill them, or just this constant disappointment can be extremely, extremely detrimental to how you feel in relationships because there has been no consistency of trust. There's also a thing to this is in some degree, and I know that Black parents, we kind of are in a new wave, I feel like, of this term thrown around called gentle parenting. And y'all, it's very hard to not use traditional ways of discipline with your children. It's really hard. It's something that's kind of newly being explored and accepted in the parenting space. But there's a lot of also like miseducation around what it looks like. But for sure, the idea is to really learn to treat your children like people. Which growing up where I grew up, it's like, you're not a person, you my kid, and whatever I say goes. And so that does create in some degree toxicity because you then kind of feel less than. And so one of the things that can really impact and kind of even impact this attachment is threatening language. So toxicity related to language and physical threats are like, I'll beat your A, or you know, I'll smash you up against a wall, or I'll knock your head off. Like things like that can, although be in our heads hearing it, like as an adult, if I hear a parent say that, I don't think to myself that they're not parenting well. I think to myself, this is something my mama would say to me. But when you think about it as from a child perspective, hearing your parents say very threatening things to you and either following through with some of that or even kind of not even acknowledging that that was hurtful can really kind of over time make you feel like a lack of safety or this constant fear of physical violence being inflicted on you constantly, that you may react in situations or certain circumstances with physical violence because you were taught to some degree that that's the way you handle conflict, or this is the way that my mom exuded her frustrations when she was overwhelmed. And so this degree to this is like safety, quote unquote, of me expressing my feelings is me cussing you out or inflicting harm. And that can be very unhealthy in any relationship. If it's a man and a woman and a man is inflicting harm on a woman, but even a woman inflicting harm on a man. And although sometimes we may downplay it and say it is playful, after so long, like that really doesn't support a loving, caring relationship, even if some degree we may see it as that because that's all we've known. Okay. And so even lastly, where this could have been caused is also going back to emotionally needy caregivers. And I think, especially in the Black community, I think there's this thing of, you know, what goes on in this house stays in this house. But also, I think in some ways, some parents can have two paradigms where they completely don't share what they are going through with their kid, or parents who share everything with their kid and kind of have the expectation that their kid support or even be the emotional caregiver to the parent, to almost kind of like try to fix it. Or the parent doesn't know that this is an unhealthy way to build a relationship with your child, but because they may or may not have any other layer of support for themselves, they rely a lot on the child for their emotional needs. And as a kid who is learning how to build emotions and often doesn't have the logic or reasoning, our brain isn't fully developed till age 25. And really most of the logic and reasoning that we have isn't developed until that age. So as a kid, you don't even understand why your parent is doing this, but in some way it feels like this is their way of building attachment. But growing up, when you become an adult, you can find that that can be extremely unhealthy and very, very overwhelming to feel like your parent is extremely reliant on you emotionally. And it can almost even kind of look like more of a gossip relationship than a parent-child relationship. Okay. And then so I think also lastly, to give context, if your parent also struggled or had a fearful avoidant attachment with their parent, they may display some of these characteristics and make it hard to kind of cope and deal with some of these things. And it's a very convoluted thing, y'all. So I want to describe too that I think, taking a break really quick to kind of give context, I think that it's extremely overwhelming to hear some of this at times and kind of know what to do with it. I recognize for myself that if somebody were to come to me and said I was experiencing avoidance attachment, I would have been, one, very happy that they addressed it and like helped me understand. But also then it's like you feel defeated because you're like, I don't know what to do now. And I'm going to start to say, y'all, therapy is one of the first steps. I am always and will always be an advocate for this space, because I think we do not know at times the depth of how our mental health impacts us. And we don't realize the depth of how sometimes so rooted our trauma is. To this day, I still am in counseling almost 5 years. It'll be 5 years in like 6 months, I think. I have been in counseling so 4.5 years. I'm still unpacking things. I'm still to this day unpacking things. And I really want you all to be patient with your process, no matter how long you've been in counseling. Be patient with your process, and even be patient if you're discovering new things as you're processing through a lot of this, because it's not voided on God that these things are happening. But also, I think to some degree, especially when I talk about how we can cope with this, some of the coping mechanisms in order to get to those healthier spaces, you may not even know what the hell healthy looks like. You may not even know what healthy boundaries look like, because everything isn't so convoluted with pain and guilt and shame and avoidance and not addressing the problems. So to even start the process to do this is very overwhelming. And I tell clients all the time, like, you're going to hate me before you love me. You're going to hate therapy before you like it. You're going to hate dealing with a healing process versus when you are on the other side of it. And it's not that it's not impactful, but you're not as triggered by it. Whereas I used to be very avoidant to emotion, girl, I am all about emotion now. Whereas I used to be very avoidant in relationships, I am all about trying to address the problem and state how I feel. Whereas I'm very used to be very, very lack of self-worth, I look at myself in a different angle at times. It doesn't mean that it doesn't still happen. Like, there are times where I still feel like I'm not worthy. But in some way, shape, or form, therapy is giving me the opportunity to process through that, to understand, so that I can shift my response to a lot of things that may have been probably not the healthiest at first. And so, how do we cope with this? I think, one, you need to understand what your attachment style is. So from these episodes kind of gathering, you can kind of see where you might land with some of these, and like, do the research, like for yourself, do the research, talk to people, kind of recognize maybe for yourself where this came from, and kind of understand your own attachment. Because I think understanding your attachment gives you then the opportunity to know how to address it, which goes into the next piece, which is self-awareness. You cannot be aware of things you are not willing to address. So if you're not willing to address some of these core issues, you can't even then begin the process of reflection, of acknowledgement, of understanding, if you're not willing to want to try to address some of these areas. The other piece of that, which I think is important, especially when it comes to attachment, because attachment has a lot to do with relationships, is really understanding and practicing communication skills, which is not fun. Because one thing about avoidance, if we're talking about fearful avoidance attachment, it is extremely hard for people who are avoidant to communicate. It is probably impossible. I'm just even gonna be honest, because there's a high degree of vulnerability when you communicate, and in some degree communication forces avoidant people to address emotions they don't want to address. And so I can only speak from that and knowing that. And it also is hard for us to sometimes avoidant people to swallow that we were wrong, because again, going back to a level of control, we like to be the boss. And so it really goes back to communication and taking a lot of humble pills, because you have to really, to some degree, have good communication. Also, the other thing with communication skills in relationships, you're going to have conflict. I think it's very unsustainable and also unrealistic to think you're ever going to be in a relationship and not have conflict. And I'm not talking about conflict where y'all disagree on something and it's like, oh girl, I don't agree with you on that. I'm talking about genuine conflict where somebody hurts you and you have to bring it up to them, and it becomes conflictual because one person has one side, another person has another. But also what happens when you don't communicate is there are a lot of holes, and you fill those holes in with your own scenarios based on your experience, and you think the person is really doing X, Y, and Z, and they're really not. But you can't, you don't even have the humility to talk to them, because you would rather fill it in with your scenario based on what you think is going on than communicate. And that becomes an unhealthy response, because what that does is it doesn't give you then the opportunity to hear the other side of the story, because you don't even really want to hear it. But on the other side of it too, you're fearful that if you hear it, it may mean that you got to address some things you don't want to address. And that is so hard, y'all. I remember there were times where me and my husband would get into it and I would be like, I know I'm wrong, but I don't want to say I'm wrong. Girl, it'd be so bad. But it's important to know, like, in order to cope with this, some of this has to do with communication. And sometimes in some degree, maybe even becoming estranged to people because you really can't even communicate with them because their stuff may have been hurtful to you. Another way to cope with this is really setting healthy boundaries. And again, that goes with being in counseling to understand what boundaries are and what boundaries are healthy. Because sometimes we can create unhealthy boundaries by just like putting a wall up, and that's not, you can't even see past the wall. What I like to describe with boundaries is you putting a gate up. You can see, you can let people in still without feeling like you're opening yourself up to a million and one things. And then lastly, therapy. I think therapy is just the place and the tool to ultimately be able to begin to process some of these very complicated things that are, I think, are necessary to process through. So overall, I think, and I'm kind of closing off with this to say, why does this impact our faith? Because I think, and I'm pretty sure, I hope I've described it in some way to you that's made it practical. But our attachment can sometimes be convoluted with these things. Like if you have broken trust with people, I'm pretty sure you have broken trust with God. If you have experienced abuse or trauma, there's probably a lot of questions you have for God about why he allowed, quote unquote, that to happen. And really have a distance between you and him because you have no real understanding of knowing and really seeing, too, that hurt people, and trauma impacts people generationally. And so it takes understanding and it takes believing that God is there for us. And also, I read a scripture the other day. It was Romans 8. I want to say it was, I'm going to find it real quick while I'm talking. But like, it was talking about how nothing can separate us from God's love. And I think it's really hard to probably even in my way of looking at it, really even understand that there's nothing that could separate me from my Father, because so much of me feels like there's something to happen and I'm separated from him. But Romans 8, 38 through 39. And this was the scripture. I'm convinced that nothing can ever separate us from God's love, neither death nor life, nor angels nor demons, neither our fears for today or our worries about tomorrow. And then I'll keep going. Not even the powers of hell can separate us from God's love. No power in the sky above or in the earth below, indeed nothing in all creation, will ever be able to separate us from the love of God that is revealed in Christ Jesus our Lord. This is the New Living Translation. But the scripture about neither our fears for today or our worries about tomorrow. And I think when you're in healing or even processing things in therapy, you often have a lot of worries and fears that you think these things will separate you from God, and none of that does. None of this separates us from God's love, even our trauma. And I think that's important to note. And so I bring this up because I think triggers of this will constantly happen. Like, you're going to constantly be unpacking this over time. It just gets, I don't think it's never solved overnight. It just is a process. And I hate to say that because it's so cliche, but I recently was reflecting over some of this year, because I think, and I'll talk about this in another podcast, but I've explained to y'all that my word for 2022 was surrender. And, you know, I had my own idea of what surrenderance looked like. But I think a lot of times when God does things, he does not do it in the way that you expect. And you don't enjoy it in the process until after it happens. And you're seeing the fruit of that season kind of blossom. And it's so frustrating because there are times where I'm like, God, you know, I thought I had it all together. And it's like you bring me through a season where you just rip me apart sometimes, basically, and reveal to me that I don't have nothing together. And just how frustrating it is to always feel like you don't have anything together. How frustrating it is to kind of feel like you're at a pace, you're kind of getting it, and then God slap you in the face again with another set of things that you're like, it's just like, I won't ever get it right. And I think that's okay. And I kind of said to myself shortly after, kind of processing that, was, I'm okay with things taking time. I'm not on anybody's race. I'm not on anybody's clock. And y'all have to be okay with things maybe taking time. And it's okay if it takes time, but rather deal with it now than avoid it and have to still deal with the trauma of it later. And avoidance is particular. And I think I'm going to do avoidance in the next podcast to just talk about what it actually looks like. Because avoidance is really, really, I think, probably one of the top things that keeps us from experiencing, I would say, the fullness of what we could in healthy situations, because we just don't want to address the problem. We as people do not like uncomfortable feelings. And so because of that, we just avoid and, quote unquote, say to ourselves, we're letting it go, but you're not letting it go. And then lastly, most of why this impacts our faith is because it impacts our relationships. And relationships are necessary for us to work out our salvation. Relationships are a way to sanctify us. They're a way for us to encourage each other. They're a way for us to lift each other up, support each other, to feel loved, to feel heard, to feel validated, to feel seen. And when you don't have that, as much as people would like to say they don't have to have relationships, you need relationships in order to thrive. You need villages in order to thrive. And so I think it's important for us to know these things. And kind of closing out with this, you know, secure attachment was the first one. And I don't know it. I really don't know a lot of people that may have had a secure attachment. I'm learning to try to have secure attachment with my own child. And so it's hard, but that's an attachment. An anxious attachment, avoidant attachment, and then fearful avoidant. So research these. Take these podcasts. Share it with somebody who you think might be, that may need to listen to this or learn from this. And I really, really hope that this was a blessing to you. I've seen y'all share them on with me on Instagram when you're listening to it. Please write me an email. You can send an email to info@rosinrenee.com or write me on Instagram. Just let me know how these podcasts were impactful to you, this three-part series. I pray that it was. I really love y'all. I hope that you enjoyed this, and I'll talk to y'all next week. Bye.
It's lunchtime at Tim Hortons, and we're serving up a special deal just for you. Our new $5.99 lunch deal includes your choice of any lunch sandwich and a side of crunchy kettle chips. Because what's lunch without a little crunch? And the sandwich choice is all yours. Like a ham and Swiss, Chipotle chicken wrap, BLT, and more. Made to order just the way you like it. Tim Hortons' new lunch deal. Simple, delicious, and just $5.99. Now that's a good deal. Only at your neighborhood Tim's. U.S. only. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.